everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Panditri on a Pint. We are three blokes having an above average football conversation. Joining me on the podcast today is Po and Akshat. Ever since we made that curse on Vaishnav, I think our first episode without him was the story time episode. He's just stopped showing up after that. The man is extremely busy, but we hope to have our prodigal son back again very soon to record. But for this episode, we have surprised and surpassed ourselves because we are now recording twice in the span of 3 days, which I don't think has ever happened so seamlessly before. It is quite surprising, and it is a pleasant surprise to have Akshat and Po back again in such a short space.
The episode will still come out a week later, but yeah, it's nice to be recording like this.
Yeah.
Although it's not just like the frequency of recording, Omar, because we've already put out the episode that we recorded 3 days ago. So even the conversion time was like record time.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
It's churning out quickly now, boys. Strap yourselves in for a roller coaster ride that is called Panditri on a Pint. But let's just jump into this episode. We are going a little more technical today. We are going to talk about what is happening mostly on the pitch. And we love doing these kind of episodes because it gives our listeners a glimpse into our wonderful tactical mind that can easily helm any team of the Premier League, which Akshat has vehemently said after playing Football Manager that he is capable of doing so.
Bro, but I mean, I'll do better than Lampard. Like, I'll just say that. Like, I'm not aiming for like a top four finish here, but yeah, I can do better than him.
Fair enough. But yeah, these kind of episodes are more tactical. It gives us a riff on how each one of us think about how the game should be played. So a lot of interesting conversations brew up in the episode. And today our focus is going to be on goalkeepers and what it is to be a modern day goalkeeper. Now, this conversation has stemmed up from, very obviously, Akshat and I are Manchester United fans, and United made a new goalkeeper signing, I think after what, 12, 13 years, by bringing Onana in and parting ways to David De Gea. Now, what goes on behind the scenes, this conversation is not going to be on the moral aspects of things, whether United did right by De Gea or not. We are just going to talk about purely in terms of what the team needed and in a tactical sense, the decision that was made. So it was pretty obvious, right, that Ten Hag wanted a new goalkeeper who was comfortable on the ball. And in the first season, we saw that De Gea wasn't really Ten Hag's style of goalkeeper because he wasn't able to recycle play as well as Ten Hag would have liked and preferred to hoof the ball upfield a lot of times. And in fact, I remember this very distinctly. In the first or second friendly game of Ten Hag last season, when he just came in as the manager, there was a moment where De Gea has just smashed the ball upfield towards the center line, and you could hear Ten Hag screaming like, "David, what the fuck are you doing?" Those were his literal words.
No, and then you just like juxtapose that with what happened in the second game of the season, where he played it short, but he played it straight to a marked Eriksen, and that was, I think, Brentford's second or third goal in
Brentford.
That 4-0 mauling. I'm sure he would have said those exact same words, but in a totally different context. Like, why the fuck are you playing it short? So, it's not just about, you know, playing it long versus playing it short. It's about knowing when to do what as well, makes a modern game goalkeeper. I think that's what we're going to talk a lot about in this episode.
Yeah. So De Gea was obviously famously known for his shot stopping ability, right? And just for the listeners to give some context, we are talking about the De Gea Onana situation because it is so perfect to our conversation where we want to talk about modern day goalkeepers versus old school goalkeepers. And really, there's no better sort of comparison for the two, especially because it's so topical and so fresh right now. We can give a lot of insight into this. So De Gea is considered as probably one of the best shot stoppers that has ever played in the Premier League. He was a great, great goalkeeper to have when the shots are flying at you. But the game of football has evolved so much that goalkeeping is not just now about commanding your box and making the saves. It's also about your positioning, where you start off, how good you are on the ball, how can you start play as the 11th man, which is something we've seen Edison, Alisson, Claudio Bravo, goalkeeper Manuel Neuer, goalkeepers like this do it so often that the entire position and the requirements for that position have changed. I just want to bring Akshat into this conversation first to give us his insight on modern day goalkeeping versus old school goalkeeping.
Yeah, so I think it's a little weird to say modern day versus old school because types of goalkeepers have existed throughout history, right? There have always been ball playing goalkeepers and there have always been purely shot stopping goalkeepers back in the day. And I think we are at a moment in footballing history and the way the tactics are played out today where possession is king, right? All teams want possession. The more you have the ball, the more you can create, and the less the opposition can create, very basically. And this is the era of football we find ourselves in, where as a result of this possession-based football, teams have counter-attacked this by implementing pressing systems, right? So now what this means is that teams who love playing possession-based football will play it out from the back. And when you're playing it out from the back, that is the phase of play where you are most susceptible to losing the ball because it's with the goalkeeper, it's with the defenders, you're close to the goal you're protecting. So if the opposition wins the ball in this dangerous area, they are going to most likely score, right? So therefore, building out from the back in a possession-based system is met with a very, very rigorous press.
Right.
And to get past this press, because again, like I said, it's possession-based football, right? You can't hoof it up front and hope for the best. The whole idea is that you build out from the back. And to get past that press now that teams are employing, you need very technical defenders. But we've also come to a point where your goalkeeper also has to be technical. Now, how does that help? Simple. You create overloads, right? If you have, you create triangles, for example. If the opposition is playing, say, a 4-4-2, those two people can mark the two center backs and your wingers can mark the left back and the right back. But nobody can come and mark the goalkeeper, right? So effectively, if you think about it, it's a 5v4. And if your goalkeeper is good on the ball, you can manipulate the passing angles in such a way that you can pass through that 4-4-2. Similar with the 4-4-3, right? Yeah. You have three opposition members and then you have like the defenders plus the goalkeeper. So again, if you manipulate the angles in the passing lanes, you can make sure that you can progress the ball pretty quickly. And for that, you need a goalkeeper with obviously a very good touch to control the ball in tight situations, but also a good tactical idea of how to implement this, when to pass, who to pass to, where to position to, you know, receive the pass. You know, all these kind of things are very, very important for a modern day goalkeeper. And again, the thing is that a goalkeeper's primary duty will always be to stop goals. They're a goalkeeper, for fuck's sake, right? Of course. But yeah. It can't just be that anymore because teams are looking to play a certain way and now you need all 11 players to play that certain way. And that is why people like Onana, people like Alisson, Edison have gone for such astronomical fees in today's market because, you know, they're really worth their weight in gold.
Yeah. It's interesting you brought up that point of overloading and the 4v5 situation because even specifically with Onana last season at Inter Milan, we saw that a lot where he was so adept on the ball. And if you go back and see the way Inter have been playing out from the back, they reached the Champions League finals last season where they were managing to overload one side and traditionally play with a 5-3-2. So there's even more width that they have on offer. And Onana was able to squeeze the ball through to one of the wingers who were barraging forward on the space that was overloaded. So it's a perfect example. I want to bring Poe into this conversation. Poe, we touched upon Akshar touched upon the primary job of a goalkeeper, that is shortstopping, versus now everything that has come into play. I think you guys at Arsenal had a similar situation too when you transitioned from, say, Cech to Leno to Ramsdale. Ramsdale now is considered to be good on the ball. What do you think of a goalkeeper's characteristics and how important it is? Is it like in terms of shortstopping versus just being good on the ball?
Okay, so as Akshat said, shortstopping is the primary role of a goalkeeper. So that comes first and foremost, regardless of how good the goalkeeper is with his feet. His primary job is to save the goal and stop the ball from going into the net. So how do you quantify that? So I'm just trying to work my way to putting a number on it. Okay. So I was looking at this, and back in the day when we were kids and we just started watching football, like the primary statistics were like the number of shots taken by an attacker or the number of shots saved by a goalkeeper. This was primarily used back in the day, right? Now we've evolved and gone beyond that, like ever since organizations such as Opta and many more have come into the game, and then you have data analytics in it. You have like much more mature statistics and the way you look at the game is different. So I'm just going to try to take you guys through that. So first of all, the basis of any particular mature stat that we're looking at right now is expected goals. So we've done this many times before. I'll just repeat it once again just so that it's clear. So I'll just take the Opta's definition. Okay, so expected goals is a measure of quality of a shot based on variables such as assist type, shot angles, distance from goal, or whether it was headed, and whether it was defined as a big chance. So basically, it's a metric to put a number on the extent to which a player should have scored from that particular opportunity.
Yeah, so it's like basically if you take a shot from like 1 foot away from the goal, that expected goal of that shot would be 0.99, because it's from 0 to 1. So like you are 0.99% of the time you're going to score that goal. Versus if you take a shot from, let's say, the edge of the box, that would be like an XG or an expected goal of, say, 0.2, right? And if there are, say, three...
Unless you're Kevin De Bruyne.
Plus you're Kevin De Bruyne. Plus, you know, if there are three defenders right in front of you and you take that exact same shot, you might have an XG of, say, 0.05, versus if there are no defenders in front of you and take that same shot, you might have an XG of 0.3, right? And there's crazy number crunching which goes on behind this to come up with this.
Yeah, it's a lot of things to come up with that one number, yeah. But we are not looking at XG, right, Po? We want to go a little deeper.
Yeah. The thing is, with XG, it's a volume-based stat. It's a quantitative analysis, right? So if you, it has external factors affecting it. How do you differentiate between a lethal finisher and an average player? XG does not take that into account. Okay. So you if you go deeper, there's something called post-shot expected goals. So this particular stat takes it to another level where you eliminate the impact of external game factors such as the quality of the player on the shot. Like it takes into account when the ball leaves the feet of a player. So since we're talking about goalkeepers, normally it depends on how a team plays. Goalkeepers might look very good to your eye because they face a lot of shots. So it's obvious, right? Like if as a goalkeeper, if you face a lot of shots, you're expected to save much, much, much more than another goalkeeper playing in a different team. So like it might look, a certain goalkeeper might look good than others. Adversely, in a team which is very good defensively, a goalkeeper might not look as good because the defense is a very well organized unit and they concede very less number of chances and the goalkeeper makes very less number of saves. But
yeah.
So based on those metrics, you can't quantify or qualify a goalkeeper's ability to shortstop.
Yeah. So like if for example, a team like concedes 25 shots and a goalkeeper saves 22 of them, then they're still conceding 3 goals versus a team which concedes just say 5 shots and the goalkeeper saves just 4 of them, they concede 1 goal, right? So it's difficult to say that, okay, this guy saved 22 shots, this guy saved 4 shots. Clearly the 22 shots guy is better. But it's tough to say because those 20 of those 22 shots might be the easiest fucking saves possible. So it's like, that's what you're saying, right? It's tough to quantify it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or on the flip side, you see that a team is conceding a lot of goals. Like you said, that they've conceded 25 chances and then on the score sheet, you see a 3-0. And you keep seeing that recurring. And if you just take the final scorecard and you see that this team is conceding 3 goals every game, the first thing that you're going to think is, oh my god, this goalkeeper is shit.
Yeah.
But then you actually go in and you see that, oh wait, he's made 22 saves.
Yeah.
Out of which, like... Yep.
7 are world class.
Out of the 25 he's made, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, everything has to be taken into context is all that we are saying. You can't just read stats off a page and determine who the next best goalkeeper is, which we were very close to doing before this episode started. But we'll come to that later.
That's when advanced stats come into play, and that's what Poe is getting into.
Yeah, so basically what I was trying to get at is, like, using these generic metrics, you can't determine how good a goalkeeper is. Rather, you if you consider PSXG, basically it is a metric where it determines the quality of a shot rather than the quality of an opportunity. So XG is what determines the quality of an opportunity, but PSXG determines the quality of a shot. So you take that, which is a universally judged metric, and deduct the number of goals conceded by a goalkeeper. You can put a number on the quality of the goalkeeper's shot-stopping ability. So, like, say, for example, just to make it clear to the audience, I'll give you an example from years gone by. I'll consider De Gea as well. So De Gea, in 2017-18, he kept 18 clean sheets. Throughout that campaign, he faced 39.7 goals worth of PSXG. And he conceded actual number of goals was 28. So there's a difference of 12 number of goals. So you can say that he was phenomenal.
So meaning he was...
Oh, well, that's really good.
Yeah, that's insane. That means that he was...
Godlike.
Yeah, he was expected to concede 39 goals in that season, taking all the stats into account, the shot, how where it was taken from, how easy that shot is, taking all that into account, he was expected to concede 39 goals, but he actually conceded just 28 or 27 goals.
28, yeah.
Yeah, so 1 minus 2 is basically, I mean, the first stat minus the second stat is a good indication of 12 goals he saved. So
I think, Akshat, that particular stat has a name. And I think you know the name. PSXG minus goals.
Oh.
PSXG minus goals.
Yep.
So, okay.
I wish Poe was my math teacher.
Poe, bro.
I would have understood that A plus B whole square thing so easily.
I think I should start a YouTube channel. There's always an Indian YouTuber who's damn good at like stuff that others can't teach.
Please call the channel Poe, ma'am.
That's a joke because Poe's Twitter handle is Poe Man, so
yeah.
Anyway, was that 2017-2018 season that Arsenal game where he made that mad double triple save? I think it was against Alexis.
Yeah, Sanchez and Lacazette were there, but I think Sanchez was probably the season.
See, I don't need stats to tell me that was the best season of goalkeeping I've seen. Like, he was fucking outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, I think even the De Gea farewell videos would have that particular game clips internet. So, like...
Oh, for sure, bro. He broke a record that day.
Yeah, most number of saves...
Most saves.
In a Premier League game away from home or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fucking awesome, that game.
Amazing.
But, I mean, so that is just one aspect of what we're talking about, right? Which is the shot-stopping aspect. But the same stats are available for other areas of the game which quantify the abilities of footballers, such as the sweeping ability, the clearance ability, the passing ability. And that is something that brews more interesting of a conversation, where if you pull out stats like these... Akshat, can you just quickly see where Alisson stands in the shot stopping ability, the stat that Poe just read out?
Yeah, so I think Alisson is a unicorn because he rates very highly in both the traditional goalkeeping shot stopping aspect and the other newer stuff which we're talking about. Across Europe, I mean the top five leagues of Europe, Alisson ranked number one in post shot XG minus goals allowed. He has a difference of 10.1. Basically, he has saved 10 more goals than he was expected to based on the shots which were coming at him. And I mean, just to contextualize that, saving 10 goals across a season is a huge number. That's like very easily that could relate to like say 5 wins for the team, or that's 15 points single-handedly won by a goalkeeper in one season. It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, that's a great, great performance.
And he was also a player who scored a goal to get them in the Champions League. So that's another stat.
Yeah.
A goalkeeper's XG. Anyway, that's for later. That's probably 10 years down the line.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're talking about like other people who perform very well for this particular stat last season, some surprising names. Bernd Leno, for example, is second most in the top five leagues of Europe, which show that he has a great, you know, PSXG minus goals allowed. We have to come up with a better name for this, guys. But but that shows that he's really elite when it comes to shot stopping. Ter Stegen is, of course, he's very good on the ball, but he finished third in terms of this thing. He actually had 8.7, goals saved. Scrolling a little bit down, further down, Kepa has done very well for this stat. David Raya from Brentford, another very highly rated goalkeeper who's... people are saying that, you know, is up for that big move. Of course, both Bayern Munich goalkeepers are also there in the top 20, Manuel Neuer and Jan Sommer. Pretty much a lot of the people who you'd expect based on the season you've seen are pretty high on this list for that particular stat.
Yeah.
But I think for a goalkeeper, any goalkeeper who's on the positive end of the stat means they're doing their job, right? It means that you're doing better than expected, basically.
Do you want to shit on someone and tell us who the lowest is? The worst goalkeeper in the stat?
Man.
Gladly, bro.
Amar wants to out that person so bad.
I mean, this guy, they finish in the bottom of the Premier League. So I don't think it's that much of a surprise. Mr. Gavin Bazunu. No way. This can't be real. Am I reading this right? -16.6. He has conceded 16 goals more than he was expected to.
Damn, son.
And, this is actually pretty interesting. So, he's 205th worst. 203rd worst is Meslier, the Leeds keeper, who, again...
Meslier,
They got relegated too. So, I mean, like, there's a very high correlation, it seems, between having a shitty goalkeeper and getting relegated, basically. Another keeper who's...
But Akshat, you have to take it into context, right? I mean, both Southampton and Leeds had shocking defensive records throughout in the Premier League.
But this
campaign
is what Poe was explaining. This is based on after the shots have been taken, how the keeper is responding to them.
Right.
So,
okay.
So this is a good indication of the keepers themselves. Surprisingly, Jose Sa is also on this list. He's 187th. One name which would surprise you, I mean, surprise others, I'm very much like not surprised by this, is that Ederson ranks very low on this stat too. He has actually conceded 5 more goals than he was expected to based on his shot stopping. I think we've seen Ederson make quite a few high profile mistakes.
Hugo Lloris as well, very close to Ederson.
Yeah, Lloris had a terrible season. He was in fact replaced towards the... end of the year, right? He wasn't, or was that through injury? I'm not too sure.
Either ways, he's not playing for Spurs anymore, right? And he did not even have a proper send-off and stuff like that, which was a big thing.
Join the club, pal.
But, as I said, that this is one part of goalkeeping now, which is shot-stopping. And then there's the other part where, are you good on the ball or are you not? In the most simplest sense, let's dwell a little bit more on that. I just want to get your guys' perspective on: would you rather have a goalkeeper who is whose shot stopping abilities are a little less and he's conceding maybe two or three goals more than what he's expected to throughout the season. But what he can do is what Akshat said, break the early press, keep the ball. And a lot of times, it's not just about starting the play from the back from a goal kick. It's also about recycling, because your defenders are looking back towards your goalkeeper in certain moments when you want to play it back to the keeper, and you also want to keep possession, and you want someone adept who's going to make the right decision to keep that play flowing, to keep that play circulating. We see this with City a lot, right? Where Edison moves up and he's always an option for the center backs to make sure that City stay in possession. Or Neuer in clutch moments, I've seen him go all the way up until midfield. I remember a game which was, I think, Germany-Italy in the Euros semi-finals, where he was literally playing from the midfield to try and help Germany score. They didn't end up scoring. But what is more important to you guys at this point? Akshat?
I think it depends on the team, dude. I really do think it depends on team. Like, obviously, if the team is okay with playing long balls, if the team is okay with, you know, looking for balls over the top of their defense and going towards the target man, that's a whole other situation, right? But what I'm talking about is more of, if you are a team in the lower half of the Premier League, for example, or La Liga, or whatever league you're talking about, you want, more than, you know, trying to play expansive football, more than building out from the back, I think you want to make sure that your goal is saved.
Yep.
Right? For those teams, I think shot stopping is a lot more important, because fine, you might score 5, 6, 7 lesser goals in a season because of bad build up play, but if your goalkeeper is keeping that goal safe, then you ride with that. Versus a team like Manchester City. Manchester City cannot survive without a good ball-playing goalkeeper, right? Liverpool, to an extent, can't survive without someone who has the distribution which Alisson has. Barcelona can't survive. Erik ten Hag has decided that he would prefer someone like an Onana over, you know, David De Gea. So I think the answer to your question is just, it's available just through observation of what we're seeing in the top leagues, where teams who want to play that expansive style of football and who are towards the topper end and upper end and like looking to challenge for the titles and trophies, I think for them it becomes very important. Arsenal as well, like how you said, going from the Czech to the Leno to Ramsdale. I think these teams need to stamp their identity and stamp their authority on every single game they play. They're expected to dominate every single game they play. And for those teams who want to play like that, I think the balance slightly shifts towards having a goalkeeper who can help you in building up your play. And for the teams where that is not a priority, teams who are looking to survive in the Premier League, they just want to save goals. They just want to keep clean sheets. They just want to, you know, try to make sure that they don't have to score 3-4 goals to win a game. For them, I think shot stopping is a bit more important.
So Akshat, are you, I might be wrong, but are you saying in a way that David De Gea cannot play for any of the top 3 teams or top 4 teams in the league?
Unfortunately, yeah, I think that is the case. It's not just De Gea. I think Lloris also is a very good example at Spurs of being pretty much that, what we call an old school keeper, who, he was a great shot stopper, but not extremely comfortable with his feet. And he has not the best concentration also. When people are coming to press him, he panics and just like clears it, right? So I do think that, again, it's just a sign of the times. I'm not saying that De Gea was never meant to be like, we've spoken about how he was in 17, 18 and those kind of seasons. That just pulled us through a lot of dark shit, right? But today, the way the game is, how I explained, people are pressing so high up the pitch now and people are placing so much emphasis on possession-based football. I think that, yeah, today probably De Gea is not someone, you know, suited for the top 3, top 4 teams. 10 years back, totally different question. 10 years back, I think we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
Yeah, when he was still a lanky little kid who could not catch a cross.
I mean, he never caught a cross, bro. I don't think I've ever seen De Gea catch a cross in 10 years of Manchester United.
Actually, that's another stat, right? On crosses caught. I was just going through that page.
Yeah, we'll come to that a bit later. But I want to hear Poe's answer to the same question. Because I feel like Arsenal have gone through a very similar transition.
So I'll just use Arsenal as an example when I'm talking about this. Okay, so as you said, it depends, definitely depends on the way the manager and the team want to play. And I was just going to bring up, before you brought it up, the ideal approach for a team higher up in the table versus an ideal approach for a team below in the table. Like, you'd rather want a good shot-stopping goalkeeper when you're like, when you're a Burnley. I hate to bring up Burnley, but Burnley is the go-to example that comes up.
You had to fucking get them.
Hey, they've changed now, bro. they're a changed team now.
No, we haven't seen the new Burnley. We haven't seen the new Burnley in the Premier League. So I speak from what I know. And so yeah, like you want to have a good shot-stopping goalkeeper if you're down lower in the table, rather than a Manchester City or an Arsenal right now. Back in the day, as you mentioned, Leno and Cech, Wenger had preferences for a good goalkeeper all around, and not preferably a goalkeeper who's good on his feet, but like a player who's first and foremost is a goalkeeper. And as a goalkeeper, your primary responsibility is shot-stopping ability. And Leno, as you said, is very good at it. That's one of the reasons why I was very skeptical about the Ramsdale signing, and like the general public's opinion was also the same, right? Like, why do you want to go spend £30 million on a person
who's a relegated goalkeeper?
Who's been relegated not once but twice, and this is completely Arteta's decision to bring in someone like Ramsdale, who's much better with his feet and who can think quickly, who can get out of those tricky situations, is press resistant, can take an opposition's attacker out of the game. All these factors is what Arteta values more than shot-stopping. Of course, he definitely would value shot-stopping as an ability, but I think he values this equally, if not more. So, it all depends on that. To go more in-depth in this, playing out from your feet is a high-risk, high-reward system, right? You don't know what's going to happen. Even the best of the best make mistakes, tend to make mistakes. I don't remember if it was against you lot that Alisson gave the ball away twice in a row.
City, twice.
Yeah, twice. That was City. Yeah, okay. So, even
they
the best.
They got mauled that game.
Yeah, and even a single lapse of concentration can lead to your team losing the game. And over the past few years, you can bring up stats where, for example, Kepa, in the last season, he's played 29 league games. Errors leading to shots is 2, and error leading to goal is 0. Come down to Ramsdale, he's played all 38 games. He's had 6 errors leading to shots and 2 errors leading to goals. And as a team, you have to learn to discount these errors and like see what is important. So focus
the greater good.
Yeah, for the rest of the 32 games or 36 games, he's doing what he's supposed to do and helping your team build play right from the back, and ideally you're going to win that game. So it depends on what you value the most.
Yeah. I mean, for Kepa, it's different because he decides the team sheet. So you definitely have to discredit.
Amar will come up with that.
You know why I consider Alisson as the best goalkeeper in the world? I'm going by these same stats. Last season, he's played 37 league games, and he primarily, as everyone knows, plays out from the back. He's had 0 errors leading to shots and 0 errors leading to goals. This is just last season. I'm not talking about the season before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's actually get into that on like why Alisson is the best goalkeeper in the world from the stats that we've seen. I think he's top ranking in everything, not only in shot-stopping ability. As I said, there are stats that also talk about your passing distribution, the length of your clearance, basically how good you are on the ball. Akshat, do you want to read out Alisson's incredible goalkeeping stats?
Yeah. So, I mean, like just to build off what you said, we've spoken very basically about two different aspects of goalkeeping, the shot stopping part of it and the distribution part of it. But another aspect of a modern goalkeeper is sweeping, because sweeping is important. If like you play a much higher line, and because of that, opposition has more space behind your defense. So if they have someone fast, they can exploit that space. You're open to counterattacks. Very simple. So sweeping, I'm going to include sweeping and collecting crosses because they're somewhat similar, because you're stopping the attack from getting a shot, if that makes sense, as a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So So this third aspect of play, Alisson is great shot stopper. Like I said, number one in Europe, 10.1 PSXYZ 7 minus goals conceded, whatever the chat is called. And too many letters, bro. PSXG minus goals allowed. That's the stat. Yeah. And he's great at distribution as well. From the eye test, just looking at him play, but also the stats, which I can see right now, he is in the top 93 percentile when it comes to launching goal kicks, meaning that he launches goal kicks very less. He plays it short. The length of his goal kicks also, he's in the top 93% of like playing it short and distributing it close by. But where he is the 99th percentile and 98th percentile is in defensive actions outside the penalty area and the average distance of these defensive actions.
Yeah.
What this means is, number one, he goes out often, and number two, he goes out far. And again, like just very basically, like not to complicate it, if you have a keeper who can cover more space in front of his goal and is successfully making defensive actions in front of his goal, that is going to save you from so many shots also, which you're going to face, right? Yeah. So the fact that he's stopping shots and also stopping shots from happening is insane. He's the best at both of those things.
Sorry to cut in, Akshat. Like, it's, if, even if you don't consider the sweeping aspect, one of the primary things we've learned watching goalkeepers play or listening to people, like listening to goalkeeping coaches, is that you ideally you close down the attacker's angles, and like the quicker you do that, like it leads to much better chances of you stopping that those 1v1 situations also, right? Like you close down the complete angle of an attacker and not let him take the shot properly, and you block it off their body. I'm just referring to the situations that occur inside the D rather than outside.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about what goes on outside the D. The stat that Akshat pulled up was very interesting, where defensive actions outside the penalty area. Let's take Alisson itself into account, right? When Liverpool are playing teams at the lower rung of the table, no disrespect to them, but what those teams are most likely going to do is try to soak up pressure and hit Liverpool on the counter-attack. But just because of Alisson's heroics and what he does, that ball, if you're playing that long ball forward to find your lone striker, that ball has to be absolutely on point between the centre-backs and where the goalkeeper, the range is. Because if he misses that range, then and Alisson sees that opportunity, Alisson's going to come out. And we've seen countless number of times where Alisson is literally the last line of defense. He's coming out to stop a counter and he just sweeps the ball away out of touch, out of play, to give his team time to regroup and reorganize in defense. We've seen this a number of times against teams. But also in terms of what Akshat said, in terms of passes attempted, Alisson has been on fire, man. He ranks second highest in this as well, which is fucking amazing. So it's not only shot stopping, it's also his passes that he's taking against the opposition plus the sweeping element. It's like all around what a goalkeeper in the modern day should be is basically just look at Alisson and try to find another Alisson.
Yeah, pretty much. He's amazing. Again, we are being very nerdy and talking about stats and all, but you just look at 2-3 games of Liverpool and you don't need stats. He's just visibly so much better than a lot of other goalkeepers, his peers.
In earlier in the episode, we did speak about how we almost found the next big thing in goalkeeping, which is what's his name? Manuel Reimann, is it?
Oh man, that's your guy, bro. That's your guy.
That's yeah, Manuel Reimann. So Manuel Reimann has some absolutely incredible stats when it comes to on the ball. When you're looking at things that are on the ball. Versus short stopping, he's a German goalkeeper who plays for Bochum. I might be getting this name completely wrong.
It would be so but, funny if I just Google Bochum right now and they got relegated, bro.
I'm pretty sure they did, bro. Because I've not. Are they relegated?
I can't find them. Continue talking.
So this guy is basically a unicorn, dude. I mean, he ranks the top in everything that's related to goalkeepers on the ball. His touches is in 99th percentile, which is the highest. His launch percentage is 99th percentile, which is the highest. His defensive actions outside the penalty area, number one, 99%. Average distance of defensive actions, number one, 99%. But his PSXG minus GA is the stat that we've been talking about, is only 50%.
50%, yeah, percentile you're meaning, right? Like all these things.
Percentile, yeah, percentile.
Yeah,
percentile, my bad. So he basically ranks like out of, I think, what, there were 230 something goalkeepers
straight in the middle
in that stat list. Yeah, right in the middle, like 115.
So he's an example of what a modern day goalkeeper is, right? Someone who is not necessarily the best short stopper. I mean, he's not below average also. He's pretty much bang average short stopper, but he's good at all the other things.
Yeah, but would you want to have someone like him in the team?
See, again, I mean, like, right now we're basing this for a guy who none of us have seen, and we're just going on stats, which can be very misleading, because maybe this Bochum team is crazy and they play only in the opposition's box with an extremely high line and he's forced to do this stuff. So like, we don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
They finished 14th last season. So
yeah. Yeah. Congratulations.
Just above relegation, because
good job, Bochum.
Yeah, Germany is, is 18 teams. So they finished like two spots above the relegation.
Yeah. I mean, why not, bro? If
we did see a very interesting stat for Brighton, right? For the Brighton goalkeeper, where I think his like clearances are one of the least. So that means he's not a person who's hoofing the ball up forward a lot. And we've seen that with Brighton's play, especially in the past couple of seasons, where they're just so quick with their 1-2 short passing football.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure exactly what stat you're talking about, but I think you're talking about average length of passes. The least in entire Europe is Donnarumma, which means he is very comfortable just playing it close by to his defenders. And we haven't spoken about him, but he is also one of those keepers in that category where he's good at everything. Like, literally, the stats, he is going to be in the top.
Plus penalties, like he's a penalty specialist.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. So like, he'll be in the top 75 percentile of every single thing. And if you're there and thereabouts, that's amazing. But yeah, I mean, interestingly, the Brighton keeper, Jason Steele, who took over for, what's the other guy? That FPL idiot, bro. I lost so much because of him. What's his name?
Danny Ward.
No. The Brighton guy, bro. He was the... Shit, his name is like... I'll find out
Sanchez.
His name. Sanchez. Yeah, that
Roberto
that guy.
Sanchez, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They started off with him their main keeper and then they switched to Jason Steele. So Jason Steele, he has the second least average length of passes as a goalkeeper, which is like so perfect for what we think Brighton plays like, right? Extremely focused on build-up play. Like, do not fucking pass it long. No matter what you do not pass it long. And the data like kind of backs that up and also shows us why, what's that guy's name, bro? Roberto...
You're just forgetting.
Sanchez.
Bro,
De Zerbi.
Oh, you're talking about the manager. Yeah,
De Zerbi. Yeah, why De Zerbi changed keepers midway through the season, right? So, yeah, that's an interesting name which came up when we were looking at this.
Yeah. Do you guys have any closing points on this entire conundrum between a shot-stopping goalkeeper versus a goalkeeper on the ball?
Get a man who can do both.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean,
we've not spoken much about... we've put Alisson on a pedestal, but we've not actually spoken about the man for me, like in this generation, who redefined goalkeeping, which is Manuel Neuer.
Yeah.
As much, because he's a unicorn too. And I think what he started off with, nobody had ever seen before.
He literally swept everyone on the field as well as off the field.
Foda.
Sorry. I mean, sweeper keeper, bro.
We got it.
It was right in the face.
But no, I mean, that's a valid point, bro. Because whatever we're talking about, Alisson, I mean, we are basing our entire conversation off last season's stats, right? Which is why we're speaking so highly of Alisson, because he is at the top of his game today. But I don't have the stats to back me, but I would feel like Neuer would be very comparable if you go back 5 years and see what he was doing. He was pulling off insane saves, and he was the sweeper keeper who defined, you know, what that term means for our generation.
That role, yeah.
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 So, yeah, I totally agree. I think he was... I think pioneer is not the right word to use, because like I said, we have seen sweeper keepers throughout history, but at least for the modern era, I think he was the best one at it, for sure.
Who was that madman did you brought up pre-recording?
Bro, Bathurst. Okay, guys, especially if you're Manchester United fans, but everyone, just go on YouTube and look up Fabian Barthez' highlights, man. That
man
guy
had those wavy runs into the attacking half with the ball at his feet, no?
Bro, that guy gave no fucks, bro. He gave absolutely no fucks whatsoever. Yeah.
Did he lose the ball or was he good at it?
Sometimes, yeah, I'm sure he would have. Bro, the man, like, we're talking about sweeping and defensive actions and all that. This was an attacking goalkeeper. This man used to dribble past players. You know, sometimes a goalkeeper dribbles past one player and then they, like, pass it to someone else. This boy will dribble past one player, get motivated, and then carry the ball another, like, 15-20 yards, bro.
He's like the guy that you play on FIFA at the end of the game if you're leading 4 or 5 nil, and then you just want to fuck around with the opponent and then go all the way to the opposition's goal. That's what Barthez he used to do. He's a maverick. Yeah.
My dark days of FIFA Ultimate Team, when I was playing Championship, one guy had made it a point to score only from his goalkeeper.
Oh, damn.
Bro. And it still haunts me till this day. I will find you and I will kill you.
Are your controllers intact?
Why would you not quit, Ta, at that point, Ammar? Like, nothing is worth that, bro. God damn.
So, before we close now, I just want, like, since you guys are on this Onana high and you haven't had a goalkeeper good with his feet in a while, I'm not sure who the last person was. Barthez. Probably Schmeichel or
Barthez,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Let me open your eyes to the best kind of passes a goalkeeper can make. Okay. A goalkeeper good with his feet is not just somebody who can pass it 2 feet into the defender in front of him or, like, recircle the ball, right? It's always, like, it also depends on how good he can distribute in long range as well.
Yeah.
Them long range grass splitting passes that end up at a winger's feet, man. I hope you get to see those passes,
bro.
Oh, those are mad, bro. Those look so cool.
Yeah, bro, I really hope you guys get to see those passes.
Till Lisandro Martinez came in, we didn't even have center backs capable of doing that. So this entire concept is a new concept to us as Manchester United fans. Now you're telling me that goalkeepers can also do this. Like, I don't know how to handle that information.
But Onana is known for that, no? Like, that's what I brought up earlier in the episode, where that's exactly what he did with Inter Milan last season.
Onana is known for giving heart. I mean, I'm not ready for the heart attacks, because going from De Gea to Onana is going to be a roller coaster ride, man.
Shreth is excited.
Fuck yeah.
Well, we started this episode off with Onana. We might as well end with Onana. Just last minute reactions. Akshat, excited or no? From the looks of it, you are excited.
I am, bro. But like, he's... The thing is, I think our fans are a little bit like deluded, bro. Because everyone is like, oh, we're sorted and all now. Bro, we have had one of the best goalkeepers of his generation in our goal. And we will concede more goals in Onana. And I don't think people are ready for that yet.
Yeah.
I am ready. I know that we will concede more goals. But people have had this idea that, oh, De Gea sucks kind of a thing. I'm like, bro, we are never going to see a short stopper as good as him at Old Trafford. So it's yin and yang, bro. Yin and yang. We're improving a lot in one space, but we're the fall off from short stopping is going to be huge. I mean, okay, last season De Gea was not that good, but overall, I'm saying, you know, from what we've seen last.
No, let's talk overall, because that man has literally dragged us through like 2-3 seasons on his own.
Yeah.
Where we would have been much lower in the table
literally,
than what we already
bro, like,
were. And...
Literally just him. Like, we have got top four multiple times purely because of one man. So, put some fucking respect on that name.
Yeah. I am excited about Onana. And I'm also very sad because De Gea was, I think, my favorite player at United. And I would have liked to see a more fitting farewell for such a big club legend who... Like, as you said, United fans are delusional and they don't even consider De Gea as a club legend. But that guy has gotten us through some absolute shit. He's dragged us through it single-handedly, and a fitting farewell would have been nice.
Yeah. Post, say something about David Seaman, bro.
Say something about?
David Seaman.
No, even he is a madman, bro. Him and his ponytail. No thanks. dude made some high profile errors and he was crazy in the air, like crazy to look at as well. I mean, on the field also, dude, it's similar to Bata's, but not to such a big extent, but yeah, he's one of the best goalkeepers Arsenal have had.
Alright then, on that note, we are going to close this episode. Unfortunately, there's no story time with Akshat today. But we will be back with a new episode next week.
It's 1:15, bro. If I start telling you guys a story, you'll fall asleep. I'll only fall asleep, bro.
Alright, then we'll catch you next week, guys. Like, share and subscribe. And follow us on YouTube and on Twitter. Pundit3 on a Pint is the handle's name. Bye-bye.